Welcome to Podcast on Fire 117. Episode is titled Shaolin. And we'll explain a little bit later what that means in this case, because it might mean a few different things. You know, some episodes are called exactly what you think we are covering, but this one may be a bit mysterious, so we'll leave it at that for now. My name is Kenny B, and I'm with my good friends Hong Kong Dave and Tom KW. So say hi, buddies.
Hi.
Hello.
And we are, of course, part of the Podcast on Fire network. This is the Anchor Show Podcast on Fire, and you can locate the website where you can find all of our shows and all of the rest of the shows. And that website is podcastonfire.com. You can contact us via email, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. And we also have a message forum, of course, podcastonfire.com/forum. There's the members-only archive on that forum. If you register, you get access to tons of extra stuff from shows throughout the years. So we're talking hours here, even chunks, entire chunks, lasting hours that were left out of certain shows for different reasons. So that's all fun. But we also kind of upgraded that members-only content to the website via our bonus episodes that we post every now and again. Latest being me and Tom's discussion on Crazy Safari, which might have been, you know, a good candidate to put in the main show, the closing vampire season show, but you know, you gotta get people listening somehow, and then you can choose, you know, a crazy eyebrow raising movie for discussion in a bonus episode. That was my motivation to do Crazy Safari for that bonus episode. So that was all good fun, and who doesn't like Crazy Safari even beforehand when they see a screen cap with the mixture of, you know, a hopping vampire, Lam Ching Ying, and the Bushman from The Gods Must Be Crazy, you know what I mean? So hopefully we got you to seek out that movie, listeners, via the bonus episode. We're also on Facebook in two ways. You have our page, facebook.com/POF network, our fan page, so to say. And we also have the discussion group, so the way to reach that is simply to search Podcast on Fire Network in the Facebook search box, and you'll have to ask for an invitation. Yeah, but it's an open group, but apparently not anyone can join. The admin, which is me, have to approve you, so to say. I'll approve anyone. but it's all fun. I think the interaction between us and the listeners has steadily been growing via the Facebook group. So I think there's a case to be made for Facebook groups to, you know, they enhance interaction, it seems like, anyway. But anyway, we're also on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. I do my writing at sogoodreviews.com and sleazykvideo.com. Latest main review to be uploaded was this past Sunday, was Jamie Luke's Robot Tricks, which features Amy Yip as one of the robots, and therefore a robot with big boobs, which is who is also interested in what humans call intercourse. Yes, it's a Category 3 movie. it's been described as a manga meets the Terminator, RoboCop, and a Russ Meyer film. What is there not to like, indeed, sir? And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. We are on iTunes, of course. You can subscribe to the entire Podcast on Fire network on iTunes. And if you like, leave us a grade, and why not a small little review while you're at it if you like the show. And we can be streamed on Stitcher as well. Stitcher.com is the application. It's the place where you can find applications both for your desktop and for your smartphone. And that's me. So what's been, you know, it's been a big occasion on Hong Kong Geek Guide as of sort of today or yesterday, Hong Kong Dave?
Yeah, earlier today I passed the 1500 like mark, so I was quite pleased with that.
Well done, man. Well done. So will there be a competition?
No, I'll probably reserve that for the 2000 mark.
Right, you lazy bastard.
Yeah.
So I mean, you were motivated before to sort of go on with the fan page, but I'm sure this has, you know, adds fuel to your endeavor.
Yeah, yeah, it's good fun, and you know, still really enjoying doing it. So, just you know, it's gonna keep going.
Do you hear back from the bands that you sort of promote and stuff?
I've been trying to be more visible recently. You know, just not just putting things on there, but kind of you know, interacting on their pages and that, and getting some kind of back and forth. A bit of a dialogue going, so yeah, it's been good fun. You know.
Well done. Well, I hope you get to 2000 soon. When was this page put up? Around about approximately.
The Facebook page, back end of 2010. I think I started started it initially on Yeyaldi MySpace. May 2009. So it's you know getting on for about 3 years now. So.
That's a good steady number, you know. Mm. On that, to me that's a short amount of time, but it's depending on the endeavor, obviously, that you're occupying yourself with. But congratulations, and hope maybe the linking back and forth with the show. This show has helped somewhat.
Yeah, maybe it seems
maybe one like amongst all of those likes came from the Podcast on Fire Network plugging. So
yeah, I recognized the familiar name on there the other day.
All right.
Yeah, one came from me only recently because I'm a terrible co-host.
Yeah, I saw that.
I've heard of that thing called Hong Kong Gig Guide somewhere before.
Oh,
I don't know where. Right.
I'm never on Facebook, that's why.
It's a good excuse. No one needs to be on Facebook, really. We never really talked about we linked to your contribution to the Korean Bloggathon, Tom, but we never really, I don't think, talked about the review that you eventually put up. So, in brief, what was that and what's going on with your vcinemashow.com reviews?
That was a review of Sky Blue, which is kind of an Americanized version of a 2003 Korean film, which came out in 2005, with a dub and a few small, tiny scenes snipped out. Yeah, it's a retitle of the original Korean title was Wonderful Days, which came out in 2003, and yeah, it's my official contribution. I think it's about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, it came out, so that's there to check out, and I'm currently working on a sequel. A review of the sequel to one of the films I've already got up on there, so I won't say any more, but that's coming soon.
And an additional plug from me, I want to give Kevin Pertle a shout out, who runs the site WTF-film.com, which among other things I'm sure is a fellow Godfrey Ho obsessive, and his review of Mission Thunderbolt was this rare internet occurrence, because few places actually come at an IFD or Filmark movie thinking, rather knowing, that Godfrey Ho didn't direct everything that happened to be a cut and paste movie. He didn't. I mean, for instance, he didn't work at Filmark, so he didn't direct Robo Vampire and classic Filmark movies, and not all IFD movies either. They have different credits on them, and for instance, Philip Coe is credited as director on some of them. But that's part of the misinformation on the internet about Godfrey Ho and IFD and Filmark that Kevin neatly helped squash, and that will try to help too once IFD on Fire starts here on the Podcast on Fire Network. And Kevin, by the way, even went to the extent to ID the Taiwan movie that IFD used to create Mission Thunderbolt, the Taiwan movie that they acquired. So we'll link to his review and to his Facebook page and to his Twitter. It seems like he's a good lad to follow with some good train of thoughts, because he's a Godfrey Ho obsessive, obviously. Anyone with crap and trash in his mind is my kind of guy. there we go. Okay, a little section on the network updates. And the theme here really is creation of new shows, even though I can't tell you much at this point. I mean, some old news. I mean, IFD is still coming, as me and Mike Leader will go over IFD's history and try to find lay to rest these misconceptions that I spoke of, which will lead to a Taiwan cinema themed podcast, as IFD was very fond of using Taiwan movies for their cut and paste movies. I want IFD on Fire to be a few episodes old before I can segue into that spin-off. IFD was very fond of using their movies for their cut and paste movies, but also they used some of those movies, they presented them intact, they only slapped a dub on them. So this past week I've been working with some friends of ours on of the show and friends of ours on Facebook, and the creation of two new shows seems to have taken place. One of which I won't be on nor edit. It will be its own running thing, although they've said yes to be part of the network. And the other show I will thoroughly take care of, because I will be on it as well. And more news as the recording dates are sorted. And the only thing I can say now, because it's a bit unfair when the first show outlines aren't really, really formed. And I'd like to be a tease as well. But the only thing I will say, that the first one will feature a perspective normally not associated with Podcast on Fire or the Podcast on Fire network. And one is intrigued. So we'll see if we can raise that awareness and get more people intrigued. But it looks really good. The people that will be behind it, they're really psyched about it, and are looking to, you know, really be driving forces for the show, doing all the planning, doing all the editing, you know, getting movie clips and sound files in their interviews and stuff like that. So it seems like it sparked creativity, which I'm glad to see. We'll see what happens there. Last week was otherwise one where you, listener, got the double dose of Podcast on Fire network shows, as we debuted the director series 3 on Nam Nai Choi, which was our coverage of The Seventh Curse, a 2.5 hour coverage. And me and Hong Kong Dave, of course, did the regular Podcast on Fire, where we covered Asses, Enemas, and Simon Yam going nuts in insanity. I should tell you right now, if you haven't listened to the show, Hong Kong Dave was the one talking about Asses and Enemas.
Yeah. That surprised him.
Yeah.
It should surprise a lot of people. Including me. Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. I like this side of him. Go on. That was fun. Listen to a Podcast on Fire 116 to find out more. If Ken has in fact corrupted Hong Kong Dave after a few months of shows.
No, I'm next.
All right, though. And recordings, by the way, this week are plentiful. Aside from what we're doing right now, we are doing the director series 4 on Nam Nai Choi's The Ghost Snatchers and Killer's Nocturne, a good old double bill. And also on Sunday, this is actually Friday, one day later than usual because I was sick on Thursday. I couldn't do the show, but we are committed, and I'm glad you guys are here to you stay committed on a Friday night even. I mean, look at that. That's commitment.
No, that means you're sad.
It means I'm old.
Right, though, we need to get the positive auras flowing here. You know, it's a good thing that you record a podcast talking about Asses and Enemas on a Friday night.
Oh,
it's a good thing. Maybe it's just my Swedish perspective, but it's a good thing.
I'm wasting my life.
But what I'm doing on Sunday is actually the kind of a debut, because we've retitled the format a little bit, the debut of this week in Slee's Tidy Whitey Theater, which we call it the double bill when we rebooted This Week in Slee's, which is a show that will go online on March 29th. But this one that me and V Cinema's Josh are recording on Sunday is on Kidnap and Sentence to Hang. Kidnap is a 1974 Shaw Brothers movie, and Sentence to Hang is the remake of that, and the first Hong Kong movie to receive the Category 3 rating. So it's an important movie to talk of. And as I found out years later when I first watched Kidnap, hey, this is awfully familiar, because it's really beat by beat in some scenes. a remake. So it's a kind of a laser remake at points, but I still thought it was solid when I first watched the latter movie, so it's okay. And Japan on Fire 6-2, just a small note on that, on Mamoru Oshii's Pat Labor and the Red Spectacles. It's also honing in on a recording date. Not recorded yet, though, and not sure exactly when it will go up, because we're adding shows to the network, and that bi-weekly schedules of putting up all shows that aren't Podcast on Fire, that is always changing, kind of. So we'll see. That might debut as far ahead as May, depending on how many shows we get that are recorded. But finally, I will essentially let Tom KW and Hong Kong Dave head the research for the next commentary on Fire that we're doing, which is Wu Ma's The Dead and the Deadly. And head research, but I still would like to be on the commentary because I like the movie. But I've left that to them because I obviously trust them. I'm busy. And you guys do such a great job with the bios, and you come prepared and all of that. So it's not too much for me to let go, you know. So I don't remember if I asked you this, Dave, but had you actually watched the film before?
I have, yeah.
Okay. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to kind of shedding some light on it, because I don't think it's one a lot of people speak about.
No, definitely not. I mean, it's buried and buried. I mean, it's been on Hong Kong DVD on multiple from multiple companies and all that, but it's one of Sammo Hung's movies that isn't talked of extensively, because I'm not sure. I don't think there's a single fight scene in it, for instance. I mean, it's a more of a, you know, a goofy supernatural comedy in a way. Or do you guys remember any fight scene from it?
There's tiny dribbles of it, I think, but it's more concentrating on the kind of the comedy.
Yeah,
is what I remember from it.
Yeah, and that's why it's so fun to highlight it, because it is a fun movie. I like the interplay between Wu Ma and Sammo Hung. Sherry Chung is in it as well, and I just remember sort of the finale being her against animated special effects, which must be so boring to shoot, but you know, animated special effects are some of the best things ever in Hong Kong cinema, so especially at this time, 82-83, when this was made. And of course it has that wonderful Lam Ching Ying supporting role as the old Taoist priest.
Yeah.
Which is a killer site. So, but that's the network update. So I didn't ask before, so we'll put you on the spot, Tom KW. But do you have any last movies watch you want to briefly speak of or speak a lot about?
Yep, been a good boy this week, and got in a couple of Asian ones. I finally finished watching Isao Takahata's Studio Ghibli film only yesterday, from 1991.
Did you watch it yesterday? Or did you watch it yesterday? Was it called only yesterday? Bada boom, bada boom.
I watched it only yesterday. me and the missus, we caught the first half about 2 months ago, and for some reason put it on hold. I don't know what that says about the film, but we finally got around to finishing off. And the film's about a 20-something woman who reminisces about her childhood whilst on holiday in the countryside. It's sweet and funny in spots, but I think overall, I think, you know, it's a bit too mundane and subdued for its own good, and I think that's why I didn't feel the urge to return to it quicker. It works kind of like nostalgic tangents throughout the film, and really without an overall moving storyline to carry the whole thing, especially at 2 hours, it really is work to get through it towards the back end. But it's a nice ending. It's really beautifully animated, and it doesn't feel like a film from 1991, which is, especially an animated film from 1991, which is nice. Yeah, it looks really good.
It's always the strength of Ghibli, that their movies seem very timeless. When you start watching a movie like Laputa, Castle in the Sky, you can say, yeah, it's probably an 80s animated movie, but it's still, you know, it's head and shoulders above anything that came out at that time, and it's pretty mind-blowing what they did manually at that point, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's head and shoulders. I mean, I've seen some, like, kind of OVAs from that time period in the early 90s, and some absolute garbage out there, and the anime, you know, some really terrible animated stuff. But yeah, the Ghibli thing of films always hold up tremendously well, no matter what year they're from. But yeah, I mean, I'd recommend it. I mean, it's very slow and not a lot happens, but I think it's quite sweet and quite easy to watch and funny in spots. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend trying to sit the whole 2 hours straight away, which is what I felt with him as a director throughout his films. Isio Takahata, who is, I think, as we've kind of, or you spoke about before, Ken, is kind of a secondary player in the studio. You know, you often have Hayao Miyazaki taking most of the kind of, you know, credit for the films there, but he's done a handful of them, and Isio has, and I think all his films are kind of a problem where they're a bit too long, and they work well watching them in chunks as opposed to kind of sitting down for the whole 2 hours and sitting through them, which is the kind of the problem with this film. So I think, yeah, I'd recommend it, but I wouldn't recommend sitting through the whole 2 hours in one go. And I also managed to get in Stephen Chow's early starring vehicle, Lookout Officer.
I saw that when I prepped for the... God, what commentary was that? The Nobody's Hero commentary.
Nobody's Hero commentary.
One of the cast members was in that.
What's his name? He's the main bad guy in it. Yeah, I'm completely blanking on his name as well. Yeah. But yeah, it was. I think it's a very early film in his career. I think 1990, I believe, and some dodgy but charming special effects. And it's almost like a remake of Sammo's Where's Officer Tuba. From a few years before. It's dealing with like the dead police officer coming back and helping the living guy who's kind of track down his killer, and it's good to see Bill Tung as a bit of a badass in it. Yeah. He plays the dead guy, and he's a bit of a badass at the beginning, so it's a nice refreshing change. And Amy Yipper's quite a funny cameo.
Sunny Fang, for fuck's sake. Forget that?
How could you forget that face?
Oh god,
yeah, and there's some really like crass jokes involving a virgin's pee and cat shitting on a shrine and stuff, which I mean overall I think like a lot of his very early stuff, it's not a Stephen Chow film per se, but a pretty kind of decent film he happens to be in, so I'd recommend it. Yeah, it was good fun, really easy to watch, and that's about it. Yeah,
all right. This was released by Shaw Brothers, as this was a I think Cosmopolitan production possibly, and that had to do with TVB, and Shaw Brothers either owns TVB entirely or a whole lot, and therefore the video distribution rights wound up at Celestial when the time came to release all these movies. That's why you see certain 90s movies from Stephen Chow released by Celestial, like this, The Mad Monk, you even got Life
as well.
Pardon me?
Love on Delivery as well, so I was cut you off.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right.
Well, there's quite a few releases of shows.
And even later stuff like Lifeline, the Johnny To Fireman movie ended up at Celestial too. So, but they were not Shaw Brothers productions per se. They just had something to do with them indirectly or directly, but I'm not good at explaining that, but I think it has to do with Cosmopolitan first and foremost, and then something to do with TVB as well, but regardless, we got them on remastered DVD,
I think the print I saw it was at DVD and looked very good, very pleased with the releases that they did. But yeah, just kind of like go on what you were saying, Ken, I think it's just a lot of companies that just go bust or kind of, you know, just end their kind of film distribution, that it all goes to one major kind of, you know, company. Mm-hmm. If you look at companies like kind of Orion and stuff like in the 80s, they're now owned by MGM, I think.
Right, okay.
And he's gobbling up the little companies.
Alrighty, let's hand over to Hong Kong Dave and his last movies watched.
Yeah, my last movie watched is Jackie Chan's 100th film, 1911.
With a rather subdued retitle for the UK market compared to the other retitles of various movies. Because it's called 1911 Revolution, isn't it?
Yeah, they put a bit more on the title, just, you know, give people, I guess, a bit more to go on.
Oh. It might be a mathematics movie. I don't approve.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, people will be like, familiar with Jackie, but maybe, you know, wondering, you know, what the film's going to be about.
So. Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, generally speaking, not being a fan of the mass of co-produced kind of historical epics that have come our way these, you know, last few years. So I wasn't expecting to like it, and, yeah, I didn't, really, to be perfectly blunt. It's not to say I disliked it as such. There's nothing that's, you know, it's not a stinker by any means, but, and there are some, you know, more than decent performances in the film, not least of all from Li Bingbing and Jackie himself, who's actually really, really good. And, you know, the film's very well made by some obvious CGI ships. But, I found it ultimately a bit too sort of dour for my taste. It feels less like a film and, you know, a bit too much like a history lesson. And, I can't really trust the film from any, you know, anywhere in the world to give you some, you know, accurate sort of history, really. You know, no matter where it's from, you know, it's always going to be kind of slanted somewhat. So, you know, I'd rather read some, you know, I'd rather read a variety of books, you know, and draw my own conclusions as, you know, where the truth lies. But
are you at all interested in this kind of history or history in general?
Yeah, I'm interested, but it's getting around to sort of digging into it. It's quite it's quite time consuming to find some, you know, sort of kind of, you know, credible authors and, you know, credible works. So, but I'm definitely interested. I'd love to sort of do a bit more digging and a bit more, you know, kind of research and stuff. But
personally, I'm with you. I'm not judging, but I'm not at all interested in a really, really historical epics. Period. I mean, I'm sure there's some movies, whenever they were made, that are sort of favorites of mine, but I can't think of any that I like return to anything, especially not these Hong Kong mainland historical epics or even period epics. Doesn't really appeal to me, but that's not, and I must emphasize that is not me, you know, being critical of the way Hong Kong and mainland cooperates, because I can't judge what I haven't seen. I can just say that if I don't deem it interesting beforehand, it will kind of be tough for me to sit down with it. That is my loss, obviously, if the movies are great. But you know what I mean, it shouldn't be a strain to sit down with certain movies, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I remain kind of somewhat surprised that Jackie didn't go for more of a crowd pleaser for his 100th film, but I guess he decided to give the publicity that was always going to come with his 100th film to a project like this to sort of, earn some favour on the, on the mainland. I mean, it's a pragmatic decision, you know, it's sensible in some ways, but, disappointing to a degree, but, it's got to do what it's got to do, you know. So.
Is Chinese Zodiac next in line? Or what's next
in line?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's next up, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I, as someone who's not following current Hong Kong mainland cinema, what have you, and not really, I mean, I'm a great Jackie Chan fan, but I'm not, I'm not getting my pulse up and heart rate up whenever there's a new Jackie Chan movie announced nowadays. It's like, I'll watch it sometime, I guess.
Yeah.
The trailer for this one, which was 30 seconds of production logos and then a lot of behind-the-scenes footage, that looked pretty kick-ass. That made me look forward to the movie Chinese Zodiac, if that's what it's ultimately going to be called. And trailers normally don't do anything for me. I'll admit that right now, because especially American trailers for movies, because the editing decisions in these trailers are so goddamn predictable, especially for horror movies and shit like that. And sometimes they actually do a disservice to certain movies because they are very much not like the way the trailer make them look, which is why I don't like trailers. So perhaps this being largely a behind the scenes thing was a wise decision to at least get me on board. So
yeah, I mean, my favorite Jackie film in recent years was Little Big Soldier.
Oh yeah, that was brilliant. I never saw any trailers for that, but it didn't seem like, oh, here we go, another big mainland movie, because what movie would be a big mainland war epic with a smiling Jackie Chan on the cover and a Tweety Bird or a butterfly or whatever it was, you know, so that on the cover. So that kind of intrigued me, and God, I'm so glad I watched that movie. That was brilliant.
Yeah, it's a good mix. It's entertaining, but it's not purely entertaining. That's not all that's in there. But
it was a buddy cop, not a buddy cop movie, but a buddy comedy largely with some heart as well.
It had a bit of both. It was interesting and entertaining. So you know, if a film can kind of have a bit of both, it's doing pretty well.
Sure, I don't know if Little Big Soldier on forums and stuff was a talked of movie as such, but I just get a feeling that it kind of deserved more, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't even seen it yet.
It's worth seeing.
And it's not too long either. I mean, I'm sure it was almost 2 hours, a little bit over 2 hours. But I do recommend it, Tom, because it really, you know, when I say it's a buddy comedy, I really do mean it, because it uses all of this as a backdrop, literally. And largely, it's just, you know, the two guys running alongside, you know, the big events, which is a nice twist on it all. So, and you get to see subtle Jackie. Compared to unsubtle Jackie in the likes of New Police Story.
Yeah, it's a little over an hour and a half, 96 minutes.
Oh, it's not even that, not even 2 hours. Yeah. Way to go. So that should tell you that it concentrates more on their little, opposites. Well, they're literally opposites, if I remember correctly. I thoroughly recommend it, Tom. I think you would be pleasantly surprised. And maybe for the first time or fifth time you would cry watching a Jackie Chan movie. I don't know how Heart of Dragon or New Police Story affected you, but
let's not talk about it, New Police Story, Ken.
I'm gearing up, getting my pulse up. But you know what I mean? I like that it featured a more subtle Jackie, that someone allowed him to sort of just... someone trusted the audience. In Little Big Soldier, I guess that's my summary of it all, and I'm glad they did, because it's more effective because of it.
Yeah, I need to see it. I think a lot of people probably keep forgetting about it, because I think it came at a time when there was still a lot of shit coming out of his filmography. Because I think he made that Jackie Chan the Kung Fu Kid at the same time, which was retitled from another film, where I think he's only got a cameo in it.
Yeah, it's sort of mainland drama,
yeah,
comedy of some kind.
So I think a lot of people kind of forget that came out, myself included. I keep forgetting to kind of sit down with it, but it's definitely one I'm looking forward to sitting down with. And yeah, I'm looking forward to Armored God 3 a lot. I mean, I think I've said before, I'm not a massive fan of either of the first two films. I think they're probably my least favourite out of his 80s films. But just from the trailer itself, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, it is being co-directed by Stanley Tong, I think. I've heard conflicting things.
Okay.
Jackie's been listed under the director on a couple of sources, and then Stanley Tong has been listed as co-director on a couple of other different sources I've seen.
I wouldn't mind that, personally. I think they've always worked well together.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a couple of, you know, good ones. I mean, The Myth was a bit shite, but
that Stanley Tong? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they had a couple of, you know, great ones before that. Obviously, you know, Peace 3 and 4, and The Rumble in the Bronx. I think they did together. But did you know he directed a film called Mr. Magoo, starring Leslie Nielsen?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I never saw it, but I'm quite keen to see it. Just to
yeah,
see.
Same here.
It sounds like a mismatch, but maybe it'll be fun. Who knows?
That looks like. A car crash. I definitely want to have a look at that.
I mean, the cartoon was funny. So, well, hello, lady, and then he's looking at a brick or a dog or something. And walking on construction sites, you know, thinking he's on the street and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's some Hong Kong stuntmen in there thrown in for good measure. Who knows how much influence Stanley had on the production? But yeah.
Yep, so that's definitely one I'm looking forward to. He can bring it back, I think.
Right, though. Anything else, dude?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, I just have three brief ones before we launch into our main main chat. Some cheapies, and I think largely Taiwan themed. But first up, Killers Must Die from 1988. That's a great title. This Taiwan cheapie has a decent amount of energy, despite little means seemingly to put forth such. I mean, it's a low budget movie. And it opens up with action that seems like it's the finale cut into the beginning of the film, as there's pyro and gunplay and more explosions and, you know, left and right. And throughout, the director, you know, keeps the standard template, because it's, you know, it's a revenge movie, sort of, and it's a triad movie. It keeps that alive thanks to this keen eye for energy. And there's some great subtitles that'll keep you occupied as well, because Taiwan movies always seem to have even worse English subtitles. I posted some on Hong Kong subtitles Facebook page that even David noticed, because I think one of the subtitles was that he said all were killer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you know, instead of all was killed or all were killed. So there's plenty amount of squib action, you know, gunplay and scripts getting set up, but they're rather weak, though, kind of. It's not John Woo, but the insistence to tear it up violence-wise helps matters, and, you know, it was good fun, and I didn't mind it at all. Not boring at all, which is can be said for a lot of movies, that they're 50 minutes boring and then rest 30 minutes, so I kind of kick ass, but this worked throughout, I thought. Then I watched The Bravest Fist, which is as simple as they come. This is a, oh god, what year it was from, I don't remember right now. It's a 1970-something movie, running 73 minutes, and it's all Michael Chan Wai Man fighting off the forces in his local town, wanting to buy up businesses, and they're willing to eliminate anyone who's in their way, including tying them to a cross and whipping them to death. But it's all focused on the action. I don't think 73 minutes was the original running time, to be honest. Because even when these old-timey martial arts movies, you know, were as simple as they come and had nothing but the action, they still insisted to be around about 90 minutes. So I think it's a cut version. I welcome it. But because it's all focused on the action, and thankfully the Michael Chan co-choreographed action is pretty raw and powerful, which I like. Helps that beginning half of the 70s had these great, you know, punching and beating effects that just it really helped elevate the bashers, if you will, because you know, I guess this could be sorted into the basher category, and I did like it. 73 minutes of easy viewing, and not something that I forgot instantly either. Which is a good
Michael
sign.
Chan's like a badass, but I'm looking at a picture of him now. Are those eagle tattoos he's got, like just above his tits, real?
Yeah.
Because they are fucking amazing. I'm just looking at a picture of him now. He looks like a complete badass.
Yeah, probably made during his triad days, because it's even in this movie, this old movie, so it was not something that he made during his film career. Probably made during his triad days.
Well, I'm looking at a picture now. He's in a kung fu pose. He's got light blue smart trousers on, and actually a watch on with his top off. I mean, he's looking ready for action right now.
Michael is a badass. I really he's a badass. Like, he can be funny as hell too. Even when he normally played, you know, as the 80s and 90s went on, you know, more triad bosses and all that. But that he could be funny doing that as well. As late as You Shoot, I Shoot, when the Edmund Pang Ho Chung movie. He's really funny, and I do like him. He was never my favorite in especially period martial arts movies. I never thought he fitted period martial arts movies out of the ones I've seen, but one I saw recently called The Heroes with Dick Long, directed by Wu Ma, he looks absolutely fantastic. You know, it's he has stripes in his hair, he's just really well costumed. So that was a fit for him. Normally, I guess I'm too married to the image of him as a, you know, a triad bastard or triad boss in general. So maybe the likes of Five Element Ninja will be a surprise in that regard for me, because I haven't seen that yet. And the last movie, A Killing Order. Dick Wei directed, co-written, action directed, and starring vehicle. He did it all. Beginning 90s, this is like his second out of two movies he directed. First was Visa to hell or from hell, I can't remember now. It was definitely Visa, I know that. it's a basic cops and robbers flick, and it's definitely dull in spots, you know. And you know, people are sitting down a lot and just investigating that way, you know. So there's no snap to this this cops and robbers chase of the robbers by the cops, and there's some decent, albeit amateurish, carnage in the movie. Some decent explosions, and when I say that it's kind of on an amateur level, the scripts aren't this aren't that good either. And there's even like a shot, and I admire that they did it, but they are trying to pull off a headshot, and they do that. There's no squib effect, but the way they shot it, it ends up looking as someone just blew compressed air from the floor and upwards to make the hat flip over of the guy they shot in the head. So it looks like more like they shot him from below. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I mean, it kind of looks crap. But who am I to say that I can do it better? They did it. It didn't work, and you know, Dick Way has nothing to be ashamed of. The only shame is that you're not afraid of Dick Way at all, because you know, even though he plays a cop, you expect him to be a badass cop, because Dick Way is frightening, usually, you know, a frightening screen villain in the various Sammo Hung and Jackie Chan movies. Not so much here, which is a shame, but you know, I didn't mind it. It came and went, and that's pretty much it. So that's our discussion of Last Movies Watched. And after break, we will discuss the Benny Chan movie Shaolin, if you haven't figured it out already, after the episode title, because you had like 30, 40 minutes to figure it out. It is what we're doing. We're looking at Benny Chan's Shaolin. Welcome back, and for this week's review, Tom picked, actually it was a few weeks ago, but we, since Tom couldn't make it last week, we brought in a backup review of Insanity. So this has been a mentioned pick on the show before, but this week it finally comes to fruition and comes true, and it's Benny Chan's Shaolin from 2011, and I'll let Tom speak of the plot and the background on this movie, so go ahead.
Okie dokie, plot synopsis off IMDb, anonymous credit on there, so no one to credit for this one, thank you. China is plunged into strife as feuding warlords try to expand their power by warring over neighbouring lands. Fueled by his success on the battlefield, young and arrogant Hao Ji, played by Andy Lau, sneers at Shaolin's masters after killing a rival warlord on their temple grounds. But the glory comes before a fall. His own family is wiped out in an unexpected turn of events, and Hao is forced to take refuge with the monks. As the civil unrest spreads and the people suffer, Hao and the Shaolin masters are forced to take a fiery stand against the evil warlords. Sounds quite exciting. Benny Chan's his first collaboration with Andy since 1992's What a Hero. Probably most memorably collaborated on 1990's Moment of Romance. Filming started in October 2009 with the ceremony held inside an actual Shaolin monastery. Jackie Chan was actually, who has a small role in the film, was the first to announce the film on his official website when he mentioned he was involved with the project. Benny Chan actually filmed the scenes in the temple on a set he built in Zhejiang province to actually avoid damaging the temple itself, and all the cast members, apart from Jackie, went method and shaved their heads bald for filming. Jackie wore a cap to avoid shedding his luscious locks. yeah, and I was anticipating this fairly when it first got announced. I like to keep track of Benny Chan's filmography because he's one of the people in Hong Kong at the moment that makes films I enjoy. People might have mixed opinions on the quality of his films, but I enjoy his films a lot, and I think it's the closest to comfort watching in today's climate. that I get. And yeah, I mean, I saw the trailer, and the trailer sold it well. I think, you know, I like Andy Lau a lot. I think he's definitely got better with age, and the scenery and the visuals look breathtaking. You know, some part I couldn't believe it was actually filmed on a set, because it's so, you know, it just looks so real and so kind of authentic, what he's portraying on screen. And yeah, I think I've watched it twice now. First time I watched it shortly after its arrival on DVD in the UK, and then I've watched it again for the show. And yeah, I feel the same. I think it strikes up a nice balance between kind of commercial fare and something a little more substantial. It's a nice balance, and I think it's probably Benny Chan's best film to date, in my personal opinion. Don't know how David feels.
I thought it was a decent effort, but the script, the directions, and the performance didn't come together in the way that they should for me, for it to be considered more than that. I thought it was decent, but not it wasn't special for me.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement there with David there. I was pleased that it was as calm as it was, and it went when it was a story about Andy Lau only, when it was sort of confined. That was when I appreciated it the most. But then I didn't care about any other stuff that happened after that. That's my brief now, and we'll go into more in depth as we talk about it. I mean, it's the production quality obviously is very apparent. It's really classy, but not classy or glossy bad even. And you know, I admit that as much as I've bashed Benny Chan on this podcast before, I mean, the new Police Story review that I did, part of our Jack Chan special, that was a 20-minute rant about how much I hated that movie. I still do. I think it's frightening how bad that movie was. Literally frightening, considering what those he has done before and what Jackie has done before. I mean,
I mean, if you judged it in the kind of context of the 2000s again, if you completely took the 1990s out of your mind,
I still would hate it, because it's
I mean, if when it sits along kind of, you know, Heroic Duo and Robin Hood, and if it's kind of sitting along those, you know, its peers, I mean, do you think it rises above kind of that level, which are kind of near?
Well, let's see which ones I've seen. I've seen Heroic Duo. Again, I'm not intimately familiar with all these movies, but New Police Story didn't really make me interested in pursuing more. I mean, I saw Heroic Duo. That was pretty middle of the road. I don't remember anything from that. Gen X Cops I loved, actually did. Then I haven't seen anything since then. So, I mean, New Police Story, based on that comparison, it's okay. But me as a movie goer, and frankly, I can't stop comparing it to the fact that these performers, regardless of the movies, but I know they can do something more subtle. And that's why, and since they structured New Police Story as a film, not a movie with a little bit of drama thrown in just to string together the action scenes, that would have been fine. But I was so offended that they went all out with melodrama and ways to make us emote in a fake way, meaning the score, and you know, I thought it was too much, and unfortunately the action therefore didn't stand out, because I don't get interested when action is supposed to be about the drama in the movie as well, you know, connect to that. So I was really offended by it. I have to say, the first reel of New Police Story, I know we're not talking about Shaolin right now, but the first reel of New Police Story is fantastic. The dark reel where, you know, that sets into motion, you know, Jackie's downfall as a character. That's fantastic. But you know, I'm having trouble being interested in the gloss that Benny Chan provides nowadays, which is obviously a choice. I'm not saying you must return to a moment of romance territory. That's as stupid as saying, Jackie Chan, you must do another Police Story because you're 60 years old and you can.
I think the thing that's the most frustrating thing with him is the fact that he'll make something like where he really progresses as a director with Connected, which I felt was a good balance, like this film, between the glossy nature of his previous films, like Robin Hood, and also kind of, you know, a tight thriller. It's solid, The Connected. It's a genuinely solid film. Like, I think this film is as well. But then he makes, in between those films, City Under Siege, which has been universally panned, you know, by everyone, which I haven't seen yet, but I've no interest in seeing. A film called Chocolate Lovers as well, which I've never heard of.
What's the movie called, you said?
Chocolate Lovers, 2008.
I can't even see that on his filmography. Chocolate Lovers, that sounds...
I'll have a...
Okay, never mind. It was just like, that sounds intriguing.
But yeah, I mean, it's my take on Mitchan is he's a good commercial filmmaker, and I don't think he's any different from a director like Wong Jing was in the 90s. You know, he's not an auteur. You know, I don't think he has a ruling vision or wants to say anything important. He's pretty much the go-to guy for light, fun Hong Kong entertainment. And as I said, yeah, it's comfort watching. It's close to comfort watching as a modern-day filmmaker gets for me. And I mean, he's made some films which are borderline terrible. But I always think he directs, you know, with heart in terms of he's always trying his hardest to entertain.
That's a good thing. That's a great thing, and I'm so sad that I can't get on. I'm not personally interested in that way, because believe me, I like comfort viewing as much as anyone, and I would have loved Benny Chan to that he had that effect on me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he's the thing is about it, interestingly, outside, I've watched a lot of his films with friends, you know, and the missus as well, and I mean that tells me that they're easily accessible to a non-Hong Kong film fan. So for me, that's another positive in his favour, that he's making films that people who might not even be interested in Hong Kong film might see kind of, you know, in the DVD shop or something and pick up, because, do you know what I mean? It's not, like he sits on a border, which is not, he hasn't got the kind of the Hong Kong flavour. He's got a tiny bit of it, but it's also mixed kind of with, you know, it's kind of the Western filmmaker as well. It's like a nice mix, you know, and it's not on one kind of side or the other, and I think that's why it's, you know, why he obviously is still making films and why he's given the money to make these films, because they're obviously popular. I think Shaolin opened at number one the week it came out, which is, you know, obviously saying something, that people are buying these tickets because, you know, he's genuinely making films that are there to entertain.
I mean, his recent output, I mean, I've been sort of some, you know, uneven to a degree, in maybe in the stories or whatever, but his style is always very kind of smooth and accessible. So I get what you mean about it being, you know, maybe suited to, you know, a more general audience, you know, than maybe a hardcore audience. I mean, we're talking about mentioned Robbie Hood earlier. I mean, I've got you know, a couple of children, and as a family film, that actually worked really well. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily choose to sit down and watch that on my own, you know, on my own necessarily, but as a family film, it actually worked really well. So
It's funny you say it, David, because I completely agree with that, and I'm not, you know, to say, you know, my lady's completely brain dead or anything, but, you know, we sat and watched Robin Hood, and she was entertained. Yeah, I was entertained because we sat together and it was fun. You know, it's goofy, it's fun. They're both likeable characters. There's fun stuff going on. Would I sit there and watch Robin Hood on my own? Probably not, because I'm too big of a fan of Jackie Chan to see him in, you know, kind of this glossy kind of stuff that's really, you know, hurting his image slightly. And same with Michael Pugh as well. It's kind of, you know, sad to kind of see him in it, but I sat along with the missus and enjoyed it immensely.
But it does have Louis Koo, and Louis Koo is great for all ages.
Yeah, of course.
And Michael Wood.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's why. And I'm not saying that he's a great filmmaker. He maybe once was. He maybe had a vision at one point. He was young and hungry at one point. But, you know, now he's got money. He's got a couple of hits under his belt, and he's making, you know, films to entertain. And on that level, I think he succeeds pretty much, you know, kind of, four times out of five, he succeeds in making an entertaining film, and any other one he'll make.
It's been like that for 15, 16 years. I mean, and I've never objected to it. I mean, again, I was a great fan of Gen X Cops, despite that movie being incredibly silly. But it does have, among other things, you know, Francis delivering broken English dialogue that is so profane and foul mouth that it makes it a classic. But it's a fun movie too, and I enjoyed it. And it makes me think that I should have endured Gen Y Cops back at the time, because fuck me, it has Paul Rudd and he's blonde, you know, and he has a robot, and it sounds fun. He's in a Hong Kong movie, Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
And Big Bullet, by the way, pardon me, David. Big Bullet is
which
I've
never seen. Yeah, which I've never seen.
One of his big, like, first big budget movies. It's pretty annoying at points, but it's pretty fantastic action too. It's not like I'm, you know, it's a shock to me that Benny Chan is on this path, but I'm kind of sad that I'm sad and sad, but I'm simply not connecting to the movies I've seen. Again, haven't seen Connected, that might give me a different response. Haven't seen City Under Siege.
Yeah, it's pretty solid stuff.
I'd recommend Connected, Ken. Yeah, I'd recommend Connected. But if you want to, I think if you know, new police always put a bad taste in your mouth, I definitely recommend Connected, because I thought it was solid. And, you know, Visible Target was decent.
Visible Target just sounded too long. I mean, 134 minutes.
I did enjoy that myself. It's over long. You could lop 20 minutes, half an hour out of that.
Jesus.
It's like 2 hours 10, I think. It's just, it is too long, but there's some terrific scenes with J.C. Chan, Nicholas Say, and Sean Yu. Just, it's funny. It just needed to be closer to 90 minutes than sort of two and a half. So it's just,
well, it says here,
it's too long.
It says 130 minutes, the runtime is, which is, fuck it, I don't know how I sat through that. That's crazy.
It should have been closer to like 90, 100. You know, that would have been much more, you know, much tighter, much more, you know, manageable. It's just
even Robin Hood was kind of long too, I heard.
I think Robin Hood was 2 hours as well. There's the director's cuts, like nearly 140 minutes, I think, or something like that.
I watched that.
Madness.
I had the Hong Kong DVD that had both cuts on there. I watched the long one first, and it was I thought, it's torture. But then I watched watched the next one, and, you know, like 15-20 minutes shorter between the sort of I think it might have been Cannes Film Festival print on the Hong Kong cinema version. They cut it back a bit, and it worked so much better. It was still just a touch over 2 hours, but it made so much difference, just cutting a chunk out of it. It moved a lot better.
What do you feel about this film, lads? Do you think the 2 hours is warranted?
Oh yeah, that was warranted. I think I was surprised it wasn't longer, to be honest. Because that was kind of my bad joke to myself, that, whoa, if you can make an 130-minute action film, this will be 5 hours! But, you know, I this movie, I don't know, because it's a period movie, kind of demanded it too. And I didn't think it was too long, despite me being uninterested in the latter half sections of it. I thought it flowed pretty smoothly. I mean, it's overall solid, especially the middle section with Andy Lau's Enlightenment, which is very basic but still very solid, because I still like Andy Lau's performer. I have always, apart from a few turns here and there where he... in the 80s, primarily, where he tried to play cocky and all cool, and but he wasn't too confident in doing that. But many sections of Shaolin are downright uninteresting, especially the latter sections where, you know, the whole drama clashes, if you will. But I did get over the hurdle of the big budget mainland China epic feel, because I thought that would be a hurdle. But I did get over that, because it did have such a solid middle section with Andy Lau, where everything shrunk down, and I was sad to not see more of that, and sad to see that squandered by the end. I'll do a little spoiler thing at the end, because I must talk of one moment towards the end. But
I think it's funny you should say that, Ken, because I often have the same problem with period set pieces from these Hong Kong and mainland productions, especially those made within the last 10 years. So as I find, they're impersonal. They always seem to concentrate more on a certain people's or an army's plight and some epic battle or struggle that needs to be resolved. And I found Shaolin to be a refreshing change, as even though it has a great kind of ensemble cast, it was more of a personal journey, you know, of concentrating on Andy's character and the complete 180 he made from a bit of a bastard to completely stripped of everything, having to start from the very bottom. and earn acceptance that he was probably automatically given when he was a general, you know, and he had to earn it from the monks.
That's a good good point, actually. Yeah, there's the more personal element here that is missing from a good number of other films, probably most of them even.
Oh, yeah, I mean, stuff like Warlord and stuff like, what was John Woo's film? He did Red Cliff as well.
Red Cliff, yeah.
Which, yeah, I have the same problem with. They might be well-made films, but it's just there's just kind of an impersonal kind of feel to them. It's more about the spectacle of these big, you know, massive battles instead of, you know, one-on-one. And I think that's why, with this film as well, I preferred the fact the climax basically focused more on the dramatic and emotional stakes rather than giving us some kind of crazy action scene and massive battle. And, you know, a lot happens in the last half hour, but it's more characters' kind of fates and the dialogue exchange and the overall outcome that matters more than the choreography, if you know what I mean. It's more about kind of what happens and how the characters are left and in what positions they're left and what's said to other characters, as opposed to kind of just filling us up with this massive, you know, battle sequence with thousands of people.
Yeah, it's fun to see Andy Lau as this uber evil warlord with, you know, war and blood and not much else in his heart, which is, a firm setup for, you know, the 180 that you described. It's fun to see Andy Lau play up this angle a whole lot. It's not, you know, classic, you know, whoa, he could make a great screen villain for 10 movies from now on. But, you know, I did kind of fun. There's no, I did found it fun. And there's no peace and compassion, obviously, in his heart. And, you know, Andy has been for a long fucking time a strong, independent presence.
Yep.
Presence. I can't think of any times nowadays that isn't true. I mean, I haven't seen all of the stuff from Andy's filmography of the last few years, but I reckon even if he's in, you know, a third of a film, you'd still come out liking Andy Lau.
Yeah, I mean,
it's so hard for him to make an ass of himself, I think.
Yeah, he's that kind of guy, isn't he?
I think even if he's in... Like, sorry, David.
No, that's fine. Okay.
I think even if he's in kind of shitty films, I think he makes them enjoyable. I mean, I'm not, you know, worried to say, I'm scared to say, but I actually watched his remake of What Women Want.
Oh yeah, Gong Li.
The main film from last year, not his film, he's in it, but it's directed by, I think, Daming Chen, someone I wasn't really familiar with. But, I mean, I sat through that, and it's fine. Do you know what I mean? I think if it was anyone else, I'd have been annoyed to fuck with it. I think I'd have turned it off and really kind of hated on it. But the fact that it's Andy Lau, it's just enjoyable. He brings something to it that makes me want to sit and kind of watch what he's doing. And he makes choices with his films that he has appeared in a few, you know, kind of dodgy films that, you know, stuff like, I think what was the film that I saw with him in, on the train, World Without Thieves, which was a mainland film, which, you know, it's a pretty awful film, but he's brings it up to a point where it's watchable. And I think I enjoy his output of the last maybe 10 years as opposed to his 90s stuff. So I think, as you said, Ken, I mean, he's an actor who's really come leaps and bounds because he was being typecast in a slightly, like, snotty kind of triad punk roles.
Yeah.
And he's become, like, a classy kind of well-rounded talent. And I like his progression as a character over the course of the film, as I said. I like the fact we first see him and he looks like a young M. Bison from the Street Fighter series.
Oh, yeah.
And then the second time we see him, he's covered in more gold than Mr. T or someone. He uses the fashion, what am I talking about? He uses the costuming on the film to its full advantage in the beginning of the film. And
it's a cocky warlord, you know. That's what you know, the character arc is at that point. You know, that's his ultimate dream. You know, to have all the gold on his shoulder and his uniform, I guess, and nothing else matters.
Yeah, and I think this is what you're alluding to, Ken. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but there's...
I'm going at the end of the review because I'm...
Okay. But
I need to dish out some hate at the end of this review.
Yeah, but I'll just mention now, but there's Andy's character and his wife's reunion is quite emotionally charged. I felt it was really earned. I mean, you kind of see it coming, that they're going to be reunited at one point. but a fate's kind of left unsealed. But you kind of see it coming out there. But there's a flashback that really struck a chord with me. That's very effectively placed where it was, and I'm not gonna lie, it brought a tear to my eye. And even on the second run, really just brought you in. I think it was really earned, and I commend whether it was Ben Chan's idea or, you know, the editor's idea or what, but the scene came at a time that wasn't predictable. It came at a different time in the film, which really upped the kind of emotional stakes, if that's what you're talking about, Ken.
Nope.
Okay. That's.
But it's good that you mentioned the wife. I want to single out that I can never recognize her from movie to movie. But the wife is apparently Fan Bingbing from Shinjuku Incident and some other movies. I thought she was fantastic with Jackie in Shinjuku Incident, and I think that continues here. I think she's she can emote very well without it being overplayed, and she's drop dead gorgeous, obviously. But I see a lot of talent in her, like sort of. That mainland actress from The Beaststalker, Chang Ying-Chu, she was in Prodigy as well, playing like the doped up woman that Daniel Wu befriends in that movie. So good strong presences from the mainland, Fan Bingbing and Chang Ying-Chu, especially.
Yeah. I mean, she's good. I mean, she's not, she hasn't got a massive role in it, but I think her roles, the scenes that she's in work very well to enhance the film and the emotional stakes of the film, definitely.
I mean, leading into, if we jump back a little in structure here, into the Shaolin portions of the film, I mean, there's pretty decent, you know, build of tension during the sequence, you know, the dinner sequence between Andy Lau and the other warlord that leads into him actually executing the other warlord and all the mayhem that ensues after that, and him going on the run and ending up at the Shaolin Temple. There's some pretty good stuff in here, and in terms of action, so going from that and speaking a little bit about action, I thought there was because it does focus on action a bit, you know, fight action,
yeah.
And I thought there were some good points and some really really bad points. The first good point is one of the earlier exchanges looked really promising for the movie. The exchange between Nick Che, who plays the you know, the younger warlord that takes over the whole thing, and Kung Fu Hustle's Xing Yu, that was so impressive. I think that because it was a stable shot of them just exchanging, you know, yeah, exactly, many moves in a stable camera, looks fantastic. And but then overall I thought the action was shot way too close, and it was too confusing for me. And even I'm sorry, but even wire work looked oddly dumb at points here. You know, people jumping out of the way of something, it just looks so sluggish. Because you know what I mean?
It was slow. Yeah, it was slow.
Delayed, slowed reaction, kind of.
Yeah, there's a bit of wire work in it. I didn't find it distracting or annoying, but I mean, obviously it's better than, you know, kind of CGI work or anything like that, which is not a lot of in the film. But I definitely agree with you that it seems a bit, you know, it should have been undercranked a bit more. It should have kind of been a bit faster to not let the, you know, the human eye kind of concentrate on the fact that it's a wire.
Yeah,
because it's there for so long, you kind of go, it's a wire.
Yeah, and if you notice it, I think you're doing something wrong. Because in the 90s, when they were still, you know, new to this extravagant wire work, they could still dazzle us. You know, and without it seeming coming off like I just said. So I don't know what's happened there. And they even do it with, you know, performers that definitely are more suited for wires, the actual martial arts performance and all of that. But they were minor sections. But I if I notice it, it's definitely something they should have, as you said, cranked a little bit. So, but
yeah, I think they're the fight scenes in general. I don't think they're as big a part of the film as the advertisement and the title of the film kind of will lead you to believe that.
Oh, no.
You know, because there's small kind of smidgens and in between. Mostly, it's a drama. It's a drama set around, you know, a kind of, obviously, a kind of action-y plot with, like, kidnapping and, you know, betrayal and stuff like that. But, yeah, the fight scenes to me aren't anything mind-blowing. They're very solid. There's a couple of dodgy moments, but I think for me they're overall just quite solid. And it helps having, obviously, Wu Jing and, as you said, Ken Xingyu, who is actually a 32nd generation Shaolin monk, which I didn't know. But I think they're both very talented young martial artists who are really making waves, especially being used in Donnie Yen's films. They're in Flashpoint and SBL, and Ip Man as well. Yeah, I mean, I think Xingyu's in Flashpoint and Ip Man, and Wu Jing had the awesome fight, the knife fight with Donnie in SBL, which was really good. But I think that helps to have them. But I think the people, apart from those and kind of Andy themselves, there's not a lot of talent on display. There's a few bits of peace, especially with some of the ninja bits that fell. Well, obviously they're not ninjas, but you know what I mean, Ken, the ones that looked a bit ninja-ish, kind of the action scenes with them looked a bit fake, because I don't think anyone, they weren't particularly martial artists in the roles.
Yeah, this Godfrey Ho ninjas are the best, everyone knows that.
They seem like
ninjas only fight over secret formulas that are placed on VHS and in a tree.
Of course.
During the final fight. That's the way.
They don't fight in Andy Lau's house.
Yeah. Would have been so much better if they fought over VHS in this movie. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just naive. Leading into, again, continuing a little on that sequence that leads up to Andy Lau joining the Shaolin Temple, just filled with violence and violence against women and children. You know, not abuse, but they are hurt. And,
I think it's spanked around a bit.
Yeah, of course, but not children in that regard.
No.
As far as I remember. And leading into this is I've talked of how I disliked the new police story melodrama, but the melodrama leading into Andy Lau bringing his injured wife and his kid to the Shaolin Temple, that makes sense. It's melodrama balanced with huge emotions, huge irrational emotions from this guy who is still in his little, evil face. He just killed someone, and he's just demanding them. I kill every one of you. You don't fix her now. And I like that. That was a neatly struck balance, and it seems like it's the high point before he has to take his journey. And so, what did you think of that lead-in and subsequent, Andy Lau confined drama being a Shaolin monk, David?
Yeah, that's my favorite part of his performance. I think he does that very well. I mean, he's really developed as an actor, and he's really worked at his craft. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people that are more naturally sort of gifted in as actors in Hong Kong cinema, but he works really hard, and he's really developed his craft, and he's got to the point where he can do a lot, with like a look or a gesture, and he can do that kind of non-verbal stuff really well. Mm-hmm. So it's, I really like that aspect of his performance in this film.
And that goes in line with the fact that I appreciated that the movie is partly a reserved, quiet film. And then when you lead into Jackie's barely supporting role, really, I liked it. He's as this somewhat goofy but clearly in control chef, that sees through any bullshit, essentially. He's not as goofy as he's definitely not dumb. And I like that. And before I saw the film, I drew some silly comparison to Simon Yoon's role as the chef in Mystery of Chess Boxing, because it's the chef that teaches Lee Min's character Kung Fu in that one. So I don't know. Maybe it's a minor connection to the filmmakers back to that Joseph Kwo martial arts movie, Mystery of Chess Boxing. But I enjoyed that connection just for my own benefit, I guess. What about you, Tom? What's your take on this part of the movie that is essentially the only thing we experience in the movie? There's some parts with Nick, obviously, outside of it, but it's largely Andy Lau's film for 30-40 minutes in the film.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, on the front cover you have, well, on the UK DVD, you got kind of Andy, Jackie, and kind of Nick having an equal billing. in terms of the cover. And yeah, Andy's a star. I mean, you know, Nick's fine. It's a bit of a cartoonish role, I suppose, and I think it's a bit overplayed at times, but you know, nowhere near the length of kind of, you know, annoying. I just feel it's a lot more of a play compared to Andy Lau's more subdued performance. And then Jackie Chan, it's nothing more than a nice, small role with some kind of funny, like, sweet moments, you know, between him and Andy. And I like it because it's without the baggage of resting the whole film on his shoulders.
Excellent.
You know, without it being a Jackie Chan film. So he's allowed to, you know, just act. His small fight scene's okay, you know. By this point, I wasn't expecting him to do anything but act, so the fight scene was a nice surprise and was fun, and, you know, he was fighting with the kids, and I found him taking down guys with a, you know, steel wok and noodle preparation techniques, you know, kind of cool. It was fun. I mean, it didn't take away from the film. It kind of just fitted. It was just, you know, he felt like, you know, the, you know, nice old granddad or something.
Yeah.
Just like,
it's,
you know.
It was really sort of charming in that it's relatively low key, but you know it's eventually, you know, a small sort of semi sort of comic relief kind of supporting role. So it's actually really well sort of pitched because that's exactly what that role needs to be, and it does it just fine.
Yeah, because the word comic relief would have scared anyone off, really, but it's not comic relief in there. Like, look at me, I'm...
Yeah, it's just like, it's more kind of there's a lighter sort of touch in his performance and in his scenes that just sort of, you know, is sort of needed for the film at that point. It's still sort of, they still kind of move the story on, and it's still going, but it's just a little bit of relief almost.
Not a sign of desperation either.
No,
costing desperation, no. You know, how are we going to sell this? Does Jackie Chan have 10 minutes? He does. Okay, bring him in.
Yeah, there's some nice comedic moments with him, and I think the whole thing, there's the comedy doesn't ever feel overbearing or too much, because it's not needed. It's not really supposed to be there, but when it does kind of crop up, there's, you know, some nice gags, and the monks kind of, you know, the young guys keep falling off the logs and stuff like that. And I think I like the aspects as well of the film, that the monks are all kind of quite fleshed out. You know, they play an important role kind of throughout the film. It's not like they're faceless. You come to recognize each one individually, which I thought was nice. And there were some nice moments between each other in the beginning of the film. And obviously they all stand together at the end of the film. So I think that's kind of a vital element. It's not only the stars, it's not only, you know, Sam and Andy and Nicky, it's the kind of the small character actors, like I said, with what's his name, Wu Jing, and
the other martial arts actor, Xingyu.
Yeah, Xingyu and Wu Jing, thank you again. I mean, it's they're kind of they play a kind of as vital a part as the main guys, because it all kind of sits together. It's they're all cogs in the kind of machine, and they keep it running. And yeah, I mean, there's never a moment throughout the film where I felt, you know, bored enough to turn it off. I mean, there's ups and downs as there are with kind of most films, but I think the moments that come that dramatically, it's just solid dramatically. Like, I've no complaints from it, and it was engaging as well. I mean, you know, it's not. I mean, the cinematography is like luscious. I think it's hands down Benny Chan's best looking film.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd agree with me on there or not, but I think it definitely
looks good.
Looking.
I mean, it's not something you do automatically.
No. I mean, he's gone out of his way to make it look. You know, the scenes as well, like near the end in the snow and stuff, are just they're the scenes that kind of captured me in the trailer. To kind of look at it, just looked absolutely beautiful. But it's not just that. It's not just kind of beautiful cinematography. It's definitely got a strong dramatic story to be told, with, you know, some great acting and some really, you know, emotional scenes. And I think I've kind of summed up what I want to say about it. What about you guys?
Well, let's move into the bad parts. you know, it all makes sense. Again, I want to mention this, that the movie is in this section that I like. It makes sense that it's calm because of the Buddhist angle, you know, the journey of enlightenment, and it's not deep but serviceable and very felt. I mean, the moment I really dug, when I was really on board with the movie, is that Andy Lau exhaling after training with the little boy, you know, says a lot in the movie, you know, that he reached something. I really enjoy that little moment, subtle moment. You know, good on you, Benny Chan. You're doing subtle stuff. I like you. You can do it. I knew you can do it. You did it in 1990 with a moment of romance when nobody thought Andy Lau could do subtle work. But, man, you did it. But then, as I alluded to earlier, outside of all of that, I can't say I have a Nick Chess plot where he's taken over as the main lord. You know, his character is Cao. He's him murdering, you know, rivals left and right. That was an interesting. I can't say essentially the monks acting as Robin Hoods were an interesting either. You know, that's essentially Xing Yu's gang. I think is doing that. I've forgotten already. That was how uninteresting it was. and there's still some good stuff every now and again. I like the reunion that happens later in the film between Andy Lau and his wife, when she's essentially tortured and almost drowned by Nick's chair, and that brings me back to Nick. I thought this was I think you summed it up good, Tom. It's an overplayed role. I don't think he was intimidating him at all, really. And I know Nick is a good actor. I absolutely know that. Way back in the 90s, even when he started out, it's just a matter of material. And I thought this was if it was supposed to be frightening, then it was still Nick I was looking at. Yep. And that doesn't work for me. It has, I don't know if it's the hair or it's just it's too great of a hairdo. But, you know, it absolutely didn't work. And that stuff is supposed to work because, you know, obviously towards the very end. And I might as well put out the spoiler warning now. So if you haven't seen it, spoiler warning. Consider this a spoiler warning. Go back to 2 hours. Watch the movie. We'll still be here with a 2-hour gap. You know, all of the destruction and action towards the end, there was nothing there. It just peters out completely. There are deaths of likable characters, of course. And I sort of wish I felt, because I was so on board with the movie earlier. And then Benny Chan has the nerve to end, well, not end the movie, but one of the final images is, you know, Andy Lau lying in the hand or lap of the Golden Buddha. While it's being showered in rain or water from somewhere. And I, oh my god. Really. Too much. We get it. I just thought I was so heavy-handed. And I'm sorry, but I laughed at that moment. And I know what they were going for and all of that. But man, you know.
I liked it.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, Tom. I'm not saying you're wrong, but it's overstating something that we knew way earlier when Benny Chan did it subtly. You know, all of that was, you know, summarized with that exhale I was talking about. That Andy Lau has, so he has saved himself. Yeah, he has turned the corner. But I don't need to see the Golden Buddha essentially crying because of the rain or water, whatever it was, and then Andy Lau lying in the Golden Buddha because he's so special now that he can. I don't know. It did make me laugh and kind of infuriate me that you're talking down to your audience. You think your audience is dumb, but they're not. They were on board with the Andy Lau section earlier. Why not honor that? That was my sort of complaint about this. But that's my personal thing, beef. Not saying that this has doomed Benny Chan for all eternity, but
no, I'd agree, Ken. It's not perfect. I think he's still there. Yeah, he still kind of has that commercial he needs to play to an audience, kind of explain fully to them. And as you said, he almost undermined himself by putting that kind of little small moment with Andy, and then doing that moment, that kind of big moment. You know, he almost kind of took away from, you know, what he did before, if you know
who,
what I mean.
Who knows if this is Suits pressuring Benny Chan to do stuff? Who knows? Because it's a movie of contrasting, you know, elements. As I said, some elements really work and are miles away from this particular moment that we're talking about. So who knows if this is studio pressure in Hong Kong? I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's not the first time we've heard of it. We've heard of it in global cinema, you know.
It's true. The interesting thing I found was just looking on Wikipedia itself. Some, I don't know who's put into it, but it's the fourth in the Shaolin Temple film series. I don't know whether it is or whether that's official, but it's the Jet Li series. It's been put under that moniker as a remake of the first one.
No, that's not true.
It's just completely wrong. I think it takes certain elements, obviously, you know, a guy running off to the Shaolin Temple and training and having to defend it, but I think it's a completely different story.
No. I mean, none of the Shaolin Temple movies with Jet Li were connected anyway. So it's that's, if you want to connect it, sure. If you want to put out a box set, sure, do that. But that's a load of rubbish, actually. So
I'd agree.
So, if Jet Li had come back to play the role, maybe that would be a more valid connection. But yeah. Anyway, I'm out of notes. So, what about you, Dave? Do you have any more notes you want to share?
Yeah, I wasn't overwhelmed by the film the first time around when it came out on sort of UK DVD, and I felt a little better about it, a little warmer about it this time around, but I'm still not entirely sure that it's this kind of story is, you know, suits Benny Chan's abilities. Really, I mean, I consider him a director of sort of, you know, considerable ability. I'm just not sure this kind of story suits him best. I don't get the sense that he was driven to make this film like maybe like Teddy Chen was with sort of Bodyguards and Assassins. All the kind of ridiculous things that kind of happened during the, you know, the production of that film, just, you know, so much just went on and over so many years. But, the first time I watched this, I actually persuaded my local family-run video store to stock this. So, you know, actually, I figured I owed them a rental, so that's how I first saw it. And, you know, I was... You know, like I said, I felt better about it this time around, but I don't quite get on board with it. There's lots of good little bits, but it just doesn't quite come together. It doesn't quite gel for me.
You know, out of all movies that I want to see out of Ben Chan's canon, again, you've turned me on to Connected. I'm sure that'll be fine. But since everybody hates City Under Siege so much, I want to give that a go.
I'm definitely gonna watch it at one point. I mean, I've no interest in.
Aaron Kwok is in a cowboy suit at one point. That is a ticket or a rental for, you know, sold.
Yeah, I mean, if I can rent it, I'm gonna give it a watch. I will, but I'm not gonna go out my way to watch it because it looks slightly shit. I've just got a few more notes. Ken, could you possibly shed some light on Benny Chan in the 1990s? I mean, there's a lot of films here that I haven't been able to find a lot of information on. Do you know, have you heard of any films after A Moment of Romance and before Who Am I? Have you seen any of them?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, from what I remember from The Sun on a Run is a pretty decent melodrama. It has its ups and downs. Haven't seen What a Hero. Moment of Romance 2 was essentially the same film, but still it has Wu Qian Lien in it again, and she's always great. Magic Crane is great fun. Great, you know, 90s wuxia fun. Goes completely batshit crazy. Has some terrible effects, but that's all fun. Man Wanted was this City on Fire clone that is, pretty standard stuff, but has some an amazing sequence where Simon Yam is by Yuron Guang, the bad guy of the piece, drugged up, and then they sellotape a gun to his hand and drop him off in the middle of Hong Kong, where he's all dazed and confused. I don't think he shoots anybody, but I just love that sequence. It has some great action too. Big Bullet, as I alluded to earlier, pretty good action film. It has some dopey comedy. Wasn't too on board with Who Am I? That's where I guess I'll end up. And love Gen X Cops, so I guess. But overall, I mean, I forgot to mention Happy Hour. I talked about that on the podcast once. That is a movie of contrasting halves as well, because it's it starts out pretty dark, then turns out to be a really light, inappropriate light court drama. It's not like he was the A Moment of Romance style auteur. during the night is he tried out different stuff and obviously must have found a comfort and a desire to work in action films. And I, as I said, since I liked certain of those films, I don't mind his direction. I'm not longing for another moment of romance because I demand that that's Benny Chan's voice or anything. But so, I mean, it's a solid filmography, obviously. But in terms of classics, I mean, maybe there's only two or three classics, but who wouldn't want two or three classics on your resume?
Very true. And just to clarify, I just had a look at that film I mentioned before, Chocolate Lovers. From what I can tell, it's actually a TVB series and not a film. Right. And it may star Benny Chan, the actor, and not anything to do with the director we're talking about.
There's actually another Benny Chan director out there.
Oh, is there as well? Okay.
Yeah. He directed at least two movies. One is called Human Pork Chop. It's a Category 3 movie. But then he directed a very lovely romantic comedy from a few years ago with Eric Kott and Candy Lau called Feel It, Say It, which I really enjoyed. I put it on one of my top 10 lists from a few years ago. So I like that Benny Chan as well. It's B-N-N-I-E, obviously way different. I just want to mention two more things before we go here. Hung Yan Yan is in this movie. Clubfoot from the Once Upon a Time in China series. Whoever he was, I don't know who he was in this movie. Yeah. Didn't you know he was there?
I know.
No. I wasn't sure it was him, and then I looked it up, and fuck me, it is him.
It is him. Oh,
and
okay.
I mean, he hasn't aged a bit. But I don't know what he was doing there. I don't know who he was. he had a fight with Xin Yu, and that was it. But you know, Hung Yan Yan is a badass, and I've always loved him. So, and great, put to such great use in the Once Upon a Time in China series, especially 3, the last Choi Hawk directed series, where Clubfoot starts out as not an evil character, but not a good character, and then gets taken in by Wong Fei-hung in some really lovely scenes, subtle scenes. So then it became more of a comedic character in the subsequent movies, but he's still pretty kick-ass, and Hung Yan Yan is, you know, the real deal and all that. I think he's wushu trained, I think, anyway. But obviously, he's got martial arts chops. And I presume it's Andy's theme for the movie playing over the end credits. I might be wrong, but regardless,
I think it was
that
Jackie was it? Was it not Jackie?
It might have been Jackie's, like, but I listened to it, and that might be Andy. Whoever it is, it's pretty good.
It's good. I liked it. I like the music throughout. I think all the little themes was quite nice as well. Yeah, I was relatively pleased with this film. I think overall, yeah.
I mean, I may sound like Rick Myers when I'm making these errors, but
that's not good.
But I'm not going to go on a 30-year, you know, standstill. In Shaolin, it was Andy Lau who sang. No, it was Jackie. Okay, it was Andy Lau who sang.
It was Bruce Lee.
Right. Okay, I think we're done. Next week, if all comes to fruition, and I hope it does, next week, Stuart Sutherland and Hard Boiled. Stuart returns, and he's picked Hard Boiled, that little indie flick with some dead beats that no one cares about anymore.
Yeah, it looks a bit. Yeah.
From the star of Dragon Ball and the director, and from the director of From Riches to Rags, comes Hard Boiled. So I'm guessing there won't be a problem acquiring those that movie. I think it's pretty dead cert that movie is in your respective collections. So.
He'd send it to me. Okay. Joking.
But I wouldn't blame anyone for not having seen Hardboiled, because logically you can't have seen every classic movie by now. And it's,
I think we're all fans here, though, aren't we? I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What about you, Dave? Or are you going to be a sourpuss about Hard Boiled?
No. I've got it on Blu-ray.
Right.
Ooh, all right then.
You like it even more then if you have it on Blu-ray.
How does it look on Blu, David?
It's pretty good. It's not bad. I mean, it's not sort of the perfect example of the most you can expect out of Blu-ray, but it's. It's good. It's good. It's great. Obviously, great for the massive extended sort of action sequences.
Oh, of course.
It's about half the film.
Well, I can say this much, Tom. If it were between a cheap version of the very latest Tottenham DVD that came out, which
you mean
was
the 11th release.
It might have been the 11th. I'm talking the if you can find a really, really latest Tottenham DVD that they did, and the Blu-ray, pick the Tottenham one if you can find that cheap. I think because they finally put out a Hardboil in a remastered version few years ago. So, but that might be rare in our print now. So, so maybe the Blu-ray is cheaper.
Yeah, it sells for them, clearly. I mean, they have re-released it about 10 times. But it's a good film, it deserves to be in shops. And every time I go into the local HMV, it's always in there. So to have your Hong Kong cinema and your permanent fixture in there is always a happy sight for me.
It might be a sign of it not selling.
no, it's not. It's nice for it to be there so people can just, you know, pick it up and get into this... this cinema that we all love,
and you put it at the front of the rack every time you go to your local shop. You know, rearrange the rack of DVDs and stuff to have Hard Boiled in the front of everything.
Say little post-it notes and write "By me" on them.
There's that weirdo again. He's doing it again. All right, though. Okay, we're done. You've been listening to Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network, located at podcastonfire.com. Contact us through various means, podcastonfire@googlemail.com email. We have also a message forum where you can reach us, podcastonfire.com/forum. The members-only archive is still there. The bonus episodes that got born and bred out of members-only are up on the website. We've done 3 so far, I believe. And we're also on Facebook. Facebook.com/POF Network is our fan site. And you can find our discussion group by searching in the Facebook search box, Podcast on Fire Network. We're also on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. Find my reviews on sogoodreviews.com and sleazykvideo.com. Don't know what I have in the pipeline for the next update, but there's either a ninja movie, a Taiwan movie, of some kind, a Hong Kong horror movie of some kind, or just some sleazy category 3 movie. That's I picked them randomly. So we'll see what the next update contains. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. Subscribe to the Podcast on Fire Network on iTunes and listen to us and stream us on the go with the application Stitcher, located at stitcher.com, where you can download both the desktop application and download it to whatever smartphone you have, including the iPhone. And again, tell us briefly about Hong Kong Geek Guide.
Yeah, I'm getting more shows through for April and May. And I've been, as we go from March into April, I'll actually start to get some shows that I can go to myself when I'm out there. So,
right on.
Looking forward to that.
Documenting in as many ways as you can and should?
Yeah, I think so. I'll go for some concert reviews this time. You know, now that I've got the sort of, the page sort of set up much more like, I want to have it, so it makes it a more suitable, a better way to do it.
Right on.
Than it was before, so.
And again, vcinemashow.com, where they can find your reviews, Tom, and you have some stuff in the pipeline, yeah?
Yep, check out all the stuff on there, and if you have 5 minutes, check out my reviews on there as well. Right. And Hong Kong Geek Guide is it's quite easy to find and like. It's right under your nose sometimes. so yeah, I recommend liking that. It's quite easy to find, yeah, definitely.
Just a click away, or in your case, a slow one click away, Tom.
Sorry, David.
Was Tom by any chance the 1500th?
No, almost.
You're sending me a DVD. You're sending me a Blu-ray of Hard Boiled.
Right on. Well, thank you, lads, for tonight. It's been a blast, and looking forward to Stuart's return next week. We hope that happens. Again, life may interfere with this stuff, but we always come back every week, regardless. So, I've been your host, Kenny B, and with me was Hong Kong Dave.
Bye.
And Tom KW.
Night, guys.